talking about real estate, and in particular, why somebody would need a real estate lawyer. And a lot of people don't. A lot of people, you know, hire a realtor, go around looking for houses, make an offer on a house, the realtor takes care of it. Real estate, and then either the real estate agent or perhaps the buyer has a title company. The title company goes through the real property records to make sure that the seller really owns the property and there are no liens or judgments or any clouds to title on the property that would last after the transaction. The title company gets the money. Usually there's a lender involved. The lender drafts up some documents. Documents are fairly straightforward and usually in a case of a mortgage not really negotiable. So people do these transactions, and they have a realtor, they have a title company, they have a bank. They sometimes don't have their own lawyer. And in small transactions that are pretty standard, maybe that's not a big problem. But there are complications to some real estate transactions, or not. Sometimes not even transactions, sometimes just based upon the use of the property, that a lawyer is needed for, and a lawyer is needed to give some guidance to a participant in a real estate transaction or involved in the use or ownership of real estate. There are really three sort of branches of real estate analysis that somebody needs to take a look at. One is, who is the owner, who has title to the property? And what rights do they have, and what sort of restrictions are there on those rights? Also, who uses the property? Is it a tenant? Is it somebody that's in possession? Is it somebody that has an easement in the property? Is it somebody who really has no authority to use it, but is using it anyway, and may have been using it for a long time, and may have acquired some rights by using it for a long time? Then the third sort of branch to look at is liens. And are there mortgage liens? Are there tax liens? Are there judgment liens? What is it that would cloud the title and ultimately give somebody the right to foreclose upon the property, either by having a foreclosure sale or by obtaining a judgment and having a sheriff or constable conduct a sale? So those are the three areas we have to look at. Title to real estate involves who owns it. And title companies usually get involved in this. And what the function of a title company is to ensure a buyer or lender or borrower on a, that's pledging a piece of property as collateral, that in fact the right person signing the deed of trust and the note and borrowing the money is in fact the owner of the property. And in a case when somebody is buying a piece of property, that the seller who is sitting across at the closing table is the one who actually owns it and has the power to sell it. And sometimes that's not as clear cut as one would think. And the purpose of title company is to make sure all that's wrapped up, and so that the buyer or borrower or the lender that is relying upon the fact that there's a clear title of this property knows that if for some reason there's a lien that nobody caught, or somebody else has some rights to the property because they had a lien on it, or because they've been using it, or perhaps it they had a fractional interest because it traces back to a grandfather that died and all but one of the grandchildren signed off on some prior deed, all of which can be problems. And it's those types of situations that lawyers can be helpful in. And can we pause? A title company will issue what is called a title commitment, or sometimes called a title report. And that will basically say, we will ensure the fact that title is clean to this property and that the buyer is getting good title or a lender is getting a good lien on this property, except, and they will list a long list of exceptions, sometimes long, sometimes short. You know, it's almost always whatever city ordinances there are that restrict the use of the property, that would apply. If there are deed restrictions and a homeowners association, that will be on there. They won't ensure the fact that the homeowners association doesn't have some rights to control what the owners or occupants of the property have. Also, they will have easements. And easements is a whole separate topic we'll take up later, but I mean, there are some rights that non-owners of the property will need in order to be able to bring utilities to the property or perhaps there are some situations where someone may need to use the property to gain access, all of which create easement issues. And the title company will report those. Sometimes a survey is necessary to determine where an easement is. For example, where a gas line is. You may want to know that as to where that is to the property. If you're planning on building or having some sort of activity on the property, you need to know what of the property is usable, what of it has an easement that may interfere with that use. I had a case the other day where somebody came in and wanted to buy 5 acres to build a building, and there was an old pipeline easement that ran across the front of the property. And what we had to do was try to get that released. And in analyzing the releases that came forth, because the title company had an exception for a release because they only got a partial release of the easement, we discovered that the only remaining part of the easement is the former pipeline company retained the right to come in and clean up any environmental problem that was later discovered. And we talked about that and decided that was not something that stopped him from doing his activity. So we took that title report, we looked at the surveys, we looked at the various documents that were in the real property records and determined that it was okay, you know, for him to go ahead and build on that property. And we also had him do an environmental study to make sure that there really weren't any environmental problems. And once we did that, he was good and we went through the transaction. But without having a lawyer look at those issues, it might have been a risky issue for him. There are people who buy properties and suddenly discover that there's a pipeline easement or some other problem and they can't use the property the way they intended for. And they needed somebody knowledgeable, probably a lawyer, to look at the title commitment before they closed to understand that that problem existed. Another area that lawyers get involved in is borrowing money. Real estate is generally expensive, and for a lot of people, that's the most expensive thing they'll ever buy, is some real estate. And most people don't have enough money to do it right up front. So real estate is then used as collateral to borrow money. And borrow money usually to purchase the property or improve the property or build on the property. But it can also be used to finance other things, just as long as the value of the property is there. And in that process, you'll have a bank or perhaps a non-bank lender, mortgage company. There are also some private lenders in certain circumstances that get in, and they will all look at the property, determine what its value is, go through a formula and say they will lend some percentage of value of that, and in so doing they will draft up a loan agreement, a promissory note, a deed of trust, which places a lien on the property, and some other papers that go with it that are unique to the deal. And in that process, there are a bunch of promises that borrowers make with regard to what they will do with the property, how they will make payments, understanding the fact that if they don't make the payments, that this property can be foreclosed upon. And it's more than just making payments, because they have to maintain insurance, they have to maintain taxes, and sometimes if it's a business, there are business requirements in terms of what sort of financial ratios they might have in order to avoid being in default on the loan, which could lead to a foreclosure on the property. So these are all those kind of things are situations where a lawyer needs to look at all the paperwork, much of which is strictly real estate, some of which is kind of goes beyond the real estate area, but is still part of the transaction, which is secured by real estate. So lawyers need to get involved in the process. Some other interesting areas that lawyers get involved in deals with possession of the property. Sometimes there are tenants. Sometimes tenants pay their rent like they're supposed to. Sometimes they don't. And sometimes the demands need to be made of the tenant. And if those don't work, then the tenant may actually need to be evicted. That didn't used to be a big headline gathering thing during this COVID time, when there are various states and federal agencies that put restrictions on who could be evicted and under what terms, and sometimes for a while outright bans on really came to light the importance of the tenant landlord relationship and what sort of rights the landlord has. In particular, there were situations where tenants were not paying rent, but landlords still had to pay their mortgage. And that was put a tight squeeze on a lot of, you know, families that had, you know, a rent house or some small rental properties that, you know, they had to carry without any help from their tenants. Much of that's gone away, and we're now kind of getting back to normal. They're generally doing, you know, evictions again. But it was an interesting area of the law. And, you know, lawyers, you know, were getting involved and trying to get it done. In theory, somebody could go through the process by themselves without a lawyer to get somebody evicted. But there's a court proceeding, there's filings, there's notices. And it's not something that is easily done by somebody who doesn't have the right kind of training or experience that a real estate lawyer, particularly that does landlord-tenant work, would have. Other areas have been of interest that I've been involved in as a lawyer are with border disputes. I had a case where several years ago where two neighbors were back-to-back to each other. Fence blew down during a storm, which happens in Houston. And then they tried to figure out where the fence was. And they were actually, although the houses backed up to each other, they're technically in different subdivisions that were developed at different times. And one of the plats said that my client's lot went 18 inches deeper than the other people's plat said. So there was about 18, and it wasn't a perfect square, but it was about 18 inches that was sort of in dispute as to who owned it. So we dealt with that. We negotiated with the other side. We came to an agreement, boundary agreement, where the line was drawn based upon, it was favorable to us, based upon the oldest of the two plats. And an agreement was made that any fence that would be built would be put on that. We drafted it up, put it in a recorded form, recorded it with the county deed records, so that now there is a resolution between these two neighbors as to where their fence should go. Also, there are, in some areas, there are what they call zero lot lines. It means your house literally comes up to the lot line, so that if you're standing outside of your house, even a foot away from your wall, you're technically on somebody else's property. And we had a case years ago where the neighbor refused to allow somebody to come in, even though it was, you know, into their property to work on the house, because there was a problem with the siding and a problem, I think an electrical problem, somebody needed to work on. But the neighbor refused to allow somebody to come into their backyard. And so we had actually had a legal fight over that and finally established the fact that there is an easement of necessity, giving somebody, you know, the right to come into the neighbor's yard at a reasonable time to do necessary works on the house. One of the things that I would advise after having that case is don't buy a house with a zero lot line because it creates problems because it's just so close. I mean, immediately adjacent to the next person's property with no room for somebody to come in there and do any work on your house. So that creates problems. Some other problems we typically run into in Texas is there's been a lot of oil and gas work done and pipelines done, all over the state of Texas. Some other states too, but Texas is notable for that. And there are, as I discussed before, sometimes old pipeline easements that may or may not still be good. One of the unique things about oil and gas law is those parties whom own the minerals can be different than those people who own the surface. So if you own 5 acres, you may just have surface rights, and if there's oil underneath, somebody else may own that, and they may have the right to drill and get it. Now, there's a whole bunch of regulations as to how they do that, but you got to be careful in Texas to make sure you don't buy a piece of property that somebody can come upon, put a drilling rig on, and drill for oil in your backyard. That's one of the things you got to look at in Texas. Finally, one of the areas that I get into is as a real estate lawyer is in what I would call, title or possession or who owns this house type disputes. A lot of times it's straightforward, but a lot of times it's not. Sometimes there's a trust that may have owned a house. Sometimes it may be grandma's house, and grandma is either incapacitated or has recently died, and suddenly the children and grandchildren are trying to figure out what to do. Is it mentioned in the will? Does she have a will? If she does, then there's a probate process that has to go through. If not, then there are some ways of dealing with the property, but it takes some cooperation. It takes some legal work in order to do either immunement of title or in some cases an actual heirship to determine who it is that has the house, get administrators appointed so the house can be sold. In the meantime, you've got lenders who may be wanting to foreclose upon the house, and that's an area which really needs, lawyers for all parties concerned to kind of focus on it, figure out what they want to do with this property, and figure out how legally to get it done and clean it up, and have a probate court make some rulings, have a title company look at the title to make sure that they've got everybody they need signing off on whatever sort of family agreement there was, and if there's not, that a court has made a ruling that allows them to give clean title to some new buyer, new lender. Also, there are earnest money contract cases. And let me explain what an earnest money contract is before I get too far in this. And I'll use the house example, though there are earnest money contracts on office buildings or ranches or other things. But say we have a house and seller wants to sell it, buyer wants to buy it, they enter into an earnest money contract, put down some earnest money, go open up title. Title insurance company looks at it and decides it's okay. And then one of the parties doesn't show up for closing, saying, I've changed my mind. And there may be circumstances that cause that, but nonetheless, these things happen. Then what do you do? I mean, the realtors are usually at that point in time ready to move on and want to suggest people, release the property so they could sell it and the buyer can go on and do something else. But in some cases, the buyer wanted the property. And it still has a contract, enforceable contract to sell it. And is, willing to sell, willing to, hire a lawyer and file a lawsuit and go to trial to enforce that contract. And I've had, taken cases to juries. And actually won and found, and the seller found out that, gee whiz, after you know, not selling the property to this guy and having to pay the pay my attorney and the attorney's fees of the buyer, I didn't get any money. And that's, you know, something that, you know, we need to think about. But these earnest money contracts are not, you know, cocktail napkin deals where you sign here and you own a house. I mean, they, you know, if you don't want to, you tear it up. I mean, they are enforceable contracts. And although usually real estate agents handle that, I mean, there are situations where, you know, something goes wrong and they come to a lawyer, and they need to. Because while a real estate agent, broker, has, you know, a license that allows them to kind of negotiate on pre-printed forms that the state board or state real estate commission, you know, comes out with, they can't go beyond that. If there is a dispute that requires some legal action, it is a lawyer that has to take over at that point in time. And this is just a primer. In later episodes, we will drill down in some more specific topics, which we'll talk, I think, about the title and the lien and possession as separate topics later on. But this is a good primer.